Fred Film Radio interview.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Lara Della Corte, and today we are here at the 25th edition of the Geo Mami Mumbai Film Festival with the director Marco Mueller. You began your journey in China nearly like 15 years ago now, and as a film student. How has, the Chinese film industry evolved since then, and what role have you played in its transformation so far? It's like almost the story of your life.
No, what happened is that since I did my MFA and my PhD in China, and I was lucky enough to see some of the older films, the films made between 49 and 65, being re-released in the aftermath of what you could call the end of the Cultural Revolution, the beginning of the Deng Xiaoping era, blah, blah, blah. I decided that I had a commitment towards, sharing the emotions I had felt watching those very precious, very special works that betrayed the existence of a Chinese cinema that was much less ideological, much less mainstream than what I thought at that time. But luckily for me, it's really a problem of age. Like, as you say, I'm getting old, so I was in China at the right moment to be there when, in 1978, the Beijing Film Academy, the first and major film school in China, was reopened. And the students that attended the Film Academy were the students that had been sent to the countryside in the aftermath of the Cultural Revolution. It was compulsory. And in due time, they started making not even the diploma films, the end of the year films. They started with the second year. And as soon as I heard that there were some works by young filmmakers, I immediately asked if I would be allowed to see that. They were quite disturbed at the beginning because they thought, well, why would a foreigner wish to see the end of the year works of this group of new directors? But eventually they conceded that, since I was working on this large scale retrospective of Chinese cinema, 135 films, Ombre Elettriche. So they said, okay, you can watch whatever we have in our hands, in spring 1990. And luckily for me, I immediately fell in love with one student film, which was called In Our Corner, 我们的角落, and the film had the director of the film was called Tian Zhuanzhuang, and he immediately became one of the major figures in the new movement. The scriptwriter was Chen Kaige, cinematographer was Zhang Yimou. So, quite naturally, I became the very first foreign film person that all these directors had the possibility to meet. And then I met all of the classmates. So it was logical that in due time, one after the other, I would help them get international exposure. And very often I escorted them. I was instrumental in creating the conditions for the world premiere or the international premiere of their films. But the industry has changed a lot from those times, because those times were in a way very favorable to experiments. The only reason why it was possible to experiment is because even the gifted filmmakers, because you could not choose, at that time there was no independent production. There were only state-controlled, state-owned studios, film studios. And so, luckily for Chen Kaige, for Zhang Yimou, for Tian Zhuanzhuang, they were sent to the studios in the south that were most distant from Beijing, from the central censorship control. They were sent to Guangxi. Guangxi is the province next to Guangdong Canton. And the Guangxi studios said, okay, go ahead. You do the films you want to do. I mean, there was very little censorship at the script stage at that time. So that is why some of those films became very unorthodox texts. I mean, I'm lucky because since, as I was telling you, I happened to be the very first film foreigner they met. There was a bonding. There was an immediate bonding. So, for instance, I mean, there is one big heretical text called One and Eight, Yige He Bage, directed by Zhang Junzhao. And that's a film that, incredibly, I mean, it could afford to be critical of the party line during the anti-Japanese war years, which was something completely unthinkable at that time. And Zhang Junzhao, the film was, of course, immediately banned by the censors, and eventually, I mean, it got released only after Zhang Junzhao did 85 modifications, including some reshoots. Mm-hmm. But since he had a copy of the director's cut, I was lucky because he gifted me with a copy of his director's cut. So I did manage to save. And in that respect, I mean, my main role has been the smuggler of these unorthodox cinematic text. I mean, I did that over the years. And then until the moment when some of the underground directors decided to go overground, and depending on the director. So in the case of Jia Zhangke, I mean, it happened quite late. The Shanghai Film Group, they knew he was a director that would definitely become a very prestigious name. So they wanted to help him to move from underground to officialdom. So at that point, the moment I was appointed director of Venice, they immediately said, you have helped Jia Zhangke enter the Venice selections with platform. Please help us to make him well known again with a film that has received the official stamp. And in other cases, I mean, that was actually the major stimulation in my process of moving from festival director to producer, because in the case of the founding father of the so-called sixth generation, the founding father of the new cinema in mainland China, Zhang Yuan, I met him when he premiered at the Hong Kong Film Festival his very first film, Mama, which really was the manifesto of the new current, in the sense that he was the very first one who understood that freedom of expression had to coincide with the possibility of controlling the ways you finance the film. And so I told Zhang Yuan, anything you will do, you come to see me. And because at that point I had already created the Hubbles Fund in Rotterdam, and then when I moved from Rotterdam to Locarno, I had created the Monte Cinema Verità Foundation. So I told him, we will help you in terms of co-financing the films, and especially financing the startup of the films, which did happen for a number of films. And then when again he was trying to do something that would receive the official stamp, because it was 17 years, a film that was dealing with the whole justice system in China. So, I mean, there was no way he could shoot it as an underground film. I told him, okay, I'll help you. I'll co-produce the film with you. And this is what I did. And I continued to to be associated with him. So that is the story. And we were lucky because, I mean, 17 years won the Silver Lion in Venice. And it was really, I mean, a major departure from the made-for-export Chinese film that were triumphing at a lot of festivals during those years.
I'm curious about things. What role do you think Chinese cinema will play in the future, actually, you know, with the fact that we have streaming, though, and also how they will deal with the global market, the film market, and what challenge do you foresee for the director to come?
No, a lot is still happening in Chinese cinema, of course. And the best testimony to this is the success of the very out-of-norm Chinese films that were produced, passed censorship, received the Dragon Seal, and then went to the major festivals. And I'm thinking of two extreme examples, like one being documentary, Qingchun Youth, that played in competition at Cannes, and the person that the celebrated writer Yu Hua translated in all the European countries declared is the hope for the future of Chinese cinema, Wei Shujun, because his film, I forgot what the title is, based on the Yu Hua short novel. Anyway, so to make a long story short, I was also involved in helping two films that played respectively in Venice and San Sebastian. And to me, they also represent, I mean, two different new facets of Chinese cinema, meaning that a lot of, there are still, that you can still have different kinds of film practice in China. And one is the very low budget, but incredibly innovative, first film by Liu Hongqi, Love is a Cold Gun, which won the Lion of the Future in Venice. Won the Lion of the Future in Venice after I recommended the film to the Critics Week. Because the official selection had rejected it.
Oh, wow.
Luckily, not just the selection committee of the Critics Week, but the jury of the Lion of the Future, they understood the importance of this film. And, the other one is a very major work. I mean, that is really, I mean, a very mature, self-assessing piece called Carefree Days by Zhang Min that was screen in the second competition. It's the second film, so in the number two competition at the San Sebastian Film Festival, and that is based on a very important novel, and it's really a very strong indictment of contemporary Chinese society, because it really talks about poverty and death, but in a very intelligent way, so that the censors could not object to it.
Can you share with us some of your memorable moments, actually, and for your, you know, extensive career in the industry? What do you think, even when you have watched the audiences, which are the audiences that they can appreciate the most Chinese cinema outside Asia, actually?
I mean, first of all, there is no such a thing as an abstract entity called audience. There are only different groups of viewers that you have to analyze and recognize based on, I mean, probably also upbringing, social status, and obviously, I mean, the viewers who could be interested in Chinese cinema, they must have at least, I mean, the kind of cultural background that make it possible for filmmakers who come from a distant land and a very different culture from our culture, to say exactly the things they wanted to say and be understood. But in a way, I mean, there was a process. So also thanks to the films that I had selected for, because I started working for the Venice Film Festival as a programmer, as the person in charge of the selection of Chinese films back in 1980. So until 95, until the only time that in any European festival, the three faces of Chinese cinema have been recognized and awarded. So Vive l'amour, Simi Liang, Golden Lion, Bright Sunny Days, yes, it's called Bright Sunny Days by Jiang Wen, won Best Actor, and then Dong Xie Xi Du. Oh, again, I always forget the English title. Wong Kar Wai's swordplay film won the best technical contribution. So it was really the major platform. But that happened also because at that time there was an awareness of what of the multifaceted Chinese cinema. So films from mainland Hong Kong and Taiwan would be equally recognized as some of the most exciting voices in contemporary cinema. And they were immediately absorbed by the market, accepted by the market, because distributors would buy those films. But then something happened actually the whole situation changed early on when Farewell My Concubine won the Golden Palm in Cannes. The very clever sales agent for the film, for this film, based on the fact that the film had won the Golden Palm, he started asking for impossible prizes for the film. So at that time, in territories like France or Germany or Italy, it was sold for $600,000-$800,000. And to recoup the money, you know, a Chinese film that at least in Italy and Germany had to be dubbed and in a way culturally translated, I mean, it needed a huge investment in terms of P&A budget, and therefore nobody could actually recoup that kind of initial investment. And that is why, I mean, slowly but steadily, all the distributors, in a way, lost faith in the possibility of continuing to present regularly, I mean, the new voices. But there is still, I mean, there are a huge group of viewers that can immediately endorse even the most difficult Chinese films. And the best proof of that is the response of the audience in Udine, because the Far East Film Festival, Giovanni da Pordenone, I mean, I've seen this 50 times, that the whole theater, Giovanni da Pordenone, 1,500 people would stand up, a standing ovation for a Chinese film, even the ones playing at 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean, so, and that is obviously the kind of young, sensitive viewers who can immediately become the right multiplicators for Chinese films.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Laura Della Corte, and we were talking with Marco Mueller at the 25th edition of the Geomami Mumbai Film Festival. Thank you for being with us.
Fred, 24/7 on Fred FM and smartphone app.